Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee to order and welcome everyone. Ms. Hirsch, good morning. Can you help us with roll? Lily, present.
Good morning. I'm still going to say it.
Yep.
Chair Lily.
Lily, present.
Lily, present. Vice Chair Jordan.
I'm present.
Jordan, present. Representative Green. Representative Green.
Present.
Green, present. Representative Acomb.
Present.
Acomb, present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, present.
Anderson, present. Representative Bow.
Bow, present.
Bow, present. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative Hassan. Representative Hassan. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Erdahl, present. Representative Wozlowick.
Wozlowick, present.
Wozlowick, present. And Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang.
I believe he's going to be absent. This he requested to be marked absent. Yeah.
Okay. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. We have a quorum, so we're open for business. Vice Chair Jordan, good morning. Have you had an opportunity to look at our minutes from our mega meeting?
I did look at the minutes from our mega meeting, Mr. Chair, and I move their approval.
Thank you. Thank you for moving the minutes and. Thank you, Ms. Hirsch and others who put those minutes together. Quite extensive. Thank you. Any questions in regards to the minutes? I don't see any. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are approved. Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan, and thank you, Ms. Hirsch and others for working on those. Well, good morning. Today we have an opportunity to visit with our Parks and Trails folks, which I'm always excited about. I have a little bit of bias in this area, and I love the work, and I know that what you're doing is immensely popular. You know, one of the upsides is more and more people are getting outside and enjoying our great outdoors in Minnesota, and all three of you and all three groups have been great stewards, and so I'm excited to hear from you this morning from the Parks and Trails. I know you, the three of you partner together. I don't know who's first. On my list, I have, I'm going to do it again, but Ms. Barras, sorry.
Thank you, Chair Lily.
Go ahead.
I'm Lisa Barajas. I am the Community Development Director at the Metropolitan Council, and the Parks and Trails are part of my division at the Council. And my comrade here is pulling up the slides. Thank you. I'm joined today by our partners, Renee Mattson, who's the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, and Erica Rivers, the State Parks and Trails Director with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. So really thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview of Minnesota's Parks and Trails legacy funding, as well as share the governor's budget recommendation for the coming biennium. Next slide, please. Excuse me, I got a little bit of a tickle in my throat this morning. Excuse me. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is guided by the 25-year long-range plan for Minnesota that is focused on parks and trails of state and regional significance. The vision for this plan is to create an inclusive, coordinated, and seamless system of outdoor recreation for Minnesota. As you may know, what distinguishes state and regional parks and trails are that they are large, natural resource-based, and that they serve a regional or statewide audience. The four strategic directions serve as the foundation of the plan and guide our agency's legacy investments. Those four pillars are on the right-hand side of the slide. Next slide, please. The governor's recommendation, budget recommendation for the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund for the fiscal year 2022 to 23 biennium is to continue the 40-40-20 split of the funds. This will be the fifth biennium to continue this important recommendation. The table in front of you on this slide reflects the adjusted February economic forecast. Next slide, please. So I'd now like to transition to the Metropolitan Regional Parks and System overview. And on behalf of our 10 regional parks implementing agency partners in the metro area, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present this overview. Excuse me, next slide, please. For the Metropolitan Regional Park System, the Metropolitan Council distributes the Parks and Trails Legacy Funds to the 10 regional parks implementing agencies by a statutorily derived formula. In that formula, 90% of the funds are distributed by this formula directly to the 10 regional parks implementing agencies. The remaining 10% provides funding for land acquisition through a first-come, first-served park acquisition opportunity fund program. For each acquisition, agencies contribute 25% of the acquisition cost, the council contributes 30% of the cost, and the legacy funds supply the remaining 45%. Next slide, please. For the 2022-23 Metro Legacy Appropriation, the elected boards and commissions of the 10 regional parks implementing agencies have put forward 49 projects for funding. All of the projects are reviewed by Metropolitan Council staff to ensure consistency with state guidelines and requirements, with the 25-year legacy plan, and with the council-approved master plans for each component of the system. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to my partner, Renee Mattson, the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. Ms. Mattson, welcome. Good morning. And go ahead when you're ready, please.
Renee Mattson, Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, coming to you from rainy Duluth today. So, Chair Lilly, I have to tell you, I think our ski season's coming to an abrupt end, unfortunately. We have the next slide, please. Thanks. So the commission operates a little bit differently from our partners. Of course, each of the partner agencies manages their own funds in a little bit different ways. At the commission, we do an annual appropriation of grants to our partners. Currently, we have 64 designated parks and trail facilities throughout the state of Minnesota. Our designation process is a bit of a high bar, but it's to ensure that once a park or trail has met the designation requirements they have, they fit as a regional model and provide what the statutory language is looking for to be a regionally significant park or trail in Greater Minnesota. So we go through an eligibility and scoring for the designation process that brought us to our 65 designated parks and trails throughout the state that have access to the legacy funding. And since our process is an annual event, what we'll be showing you in just a minute will be the recommendations by the commission for the FY22 projects. But to get to that point, every year, April 1st, which is coming up next week now, we open up our application process for our funding. And that is open through the end of July. Once that application period closes, we spend a great deal of time vetting the projects to ensure that they meet all of our criteria, they're ready to go, they have the match in place if that is something that they do have available to them. One thing that is different about our process is we don't require a match of funds, although we do look more favorably, of course, on projects that are able to do a match, but we recognize that smaller communities throughout the state of Minnesota may not always have access to those funds. So we want to make it a fair process as well. So each of our scoring criteria is based on either the park criteria, trail criteria, or connecting people to the outdoors criteria. And we look at these funding criteria every year and tweak that a little bit based on feedback from our partners, agencies, and just as our project evolves, some growth and learning. Next slide, please. So these are the projects I'm excited to talk to you about that are recommended for fiscal year 22. The first three projects that you see are actually holdovers from FY21. When COVID struck, of course, we're all well aware that last year's budgets needed to be looked at and responded to since the forecast appeared to be lower than we were expecting. So these three partner agencies were awarded funds in FY22, but worked with us so that we were able to reduce their funding amounts and make them whole, if you will, in FY22. All of these are much larger projects and were able to delay parts of them without any impact on excessive costs. In fact, they were, because the projects are larger, they were a bit happy to have an extra year of funding, actually. So these first three projects we're recommending be made whole in FY22 funds. Then the following eight projects are brand new projects that touch all six districts across the state. Mesabi Trail, for instance, is a fairly large rehabilitation project. Lake County Mountain Bike Trails, I'm excited to say, is another piece that connects up with our partners at the DNR that'll actually link up our mountain bike trails that exist already in Lake County from some grant funding they had with the beautiful new Split Rock campground that's being built up the shore, which is just a phenomenal facility. Gull Lake Trail is a connector trail that will complete a large portion of the trail around Gull Lake. Morehead River Corridor Trail, again, another connection that's being made to close that gap. Same with Chisago County Sunrise Prairie Trail. Wright County Connecting People with the Outdoors is one of our special set-asides for connecting people. And that's an equipment grant that will help them do more programming in their parks and make them available to their partners. Laverne Loop, Blue Mountains Trail, again, that's a completion of a trail around Laverne that's just beautiful and connects to Blue Mountains Trail and Blue Mountains State Park. So again, working closely with our partners at DNR. And the Winona Bluffs Traverse is a fairly newly designated project that is offering some beautiful trails along the bluffs, of course, in Winona, and will not only address some trail construction to make them more sustainable, but also does a lot of work with invasive species there. And then finally, the last two projects we had set aside as recommendations if there would be funds available, and happily it looks as though the budget forecast is so much more improved. So we'll be able to fund these projects as well. And these were projects that in FY21 we didn't fully fund. You'll see Olmsted County, actually Oxbow Park and Zolman Zoo has three different years of funding cycles, but that was a small piece of their larger project that they agreed to hold off for a year. And Sandstone Robinson Park, another just gorgeous little park in Sandstone. This was a completion of a larger project that they had. So in all, we have 13 projects recommended for FY22, and next year, actually when we open up the funding applications on April 1st, that will be for our FY23 cycle. So all exciting for us, touching all of the districts, and we're so grateful to have access to these funds to make an impact across our parks and trails in greater Minnesota as well. And now I'll turn it over to Erica Rivers with the DNR. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ms. Madsen. I hope all the members have had an opportunity to look at the Greater Minnesota brochure. There's some really neat projects in there, and of course, pictures. I like the pictures of the kids and playing and all sorts of things. So it's a really nice piece. If you haven't had one and sent to your office, please, Ms. Madsen, maybe you could send one out to everyone. Ms. Rivers, good morning. Welcome. And please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Good morning, everybody. Chair Lilly, committee members. I'm in also rainy Lakeland, Minnesota this morning. My name is Erica Rivers. I'm Director of Minnesota State Parks and Trails for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And today I'm pleased to spend just a few minutes highlighting some of the proposed DNR investments for this next biennium. Next slide, please. Our decision process is a little bit different, it's a common theme here, from the Council in Greater Minnesota. So I just wanted to quickly run through that for you folks. We start in the spring of the year, really taking a deep dive, a look at the 25-year legacy plan, and make some early strategic decisions about what gaps still exist in that 25-year plan and our progress that we're making toward those priority investments. Then in the summertime, I meet with my division leadership team, as well as sort of incorporate conversations with the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Team to evaluate the alignment of our planned investments or ideas for investments with both the DNR conservation agenda and that 25-year plan. Then come fall, the management team develops a list of projects and priorities, initiatives for the commissioner's office to review, and then we incorporate that into the final governor's budget before it's released. And then finally, once that budget is released, we compile a report on the accomplishments and proposed investment plan for the coming biennium, and we report that to you, all the chairs from both bodies of the legislature. That report was delivered on February 8th this year, 2021. Next slide, please. So this is a little pie chart that we pull together every biennium just to show how we distribute at DNR the investments in the legacy fund between all the four pillars in the Parks and Trails legacy plan. And you'll notice first and foremost on this, there's a big, huge piece of that pie there in the light blue. And that is the pillar for taking care of what we have. And we make this really large investment in taking care for two primary reasons. One is that our system is really old and well-loved. In 2014, we celebrated 125 years in the Minnesota State Parks and Trails system, which is the second oldest park system in the nation. So a lot of our system was built in the 1930s and the 1960s. Those are two primary investment areas within our history, which means that many of our buildings are about 60 to 90 years old and in serious need of rehab. So that's what we spend a big bulk of our legacy fund on, is making those really necessary improvements to our established heritage. The second reason we make this large investment is because our system is by statutory direction and natural resource-based system. So we invest significantly in that resource management, and particularly working to stop invasive species and restoring habitat and species populations within our state parks and trails. So our 22-23 biennial priorities include those critical investments in natural resources, invasive species, and habitat improvement. In that bucket of work, we invest quite a large amount with our project partners in the Conservation Corps of Minnesota and Iowa. It's a wonderful partnership that brings young adults into natural resource careers, and there's quite a bit of pride in that relationship and how much we use it for our natural resource management. And then the second big chunk is in facility rehabilitation. We have made a commitment each year over year, each biennium, to update most of all our shower buildings, something I get the most complaints about in our state park system, frankly. And this biennium will be no different with investments in shower buildings at Bearhead Lake State Park, Scenic State Park, and Lake Chetek State Parks. We also invest quite a bit in trail projects, about 4 to 6 trail bridge rehabilitations. We've got 100 on our list that need to repair. And so every year in Legacy, we're chunking those out and taking care of those and updating them and rehabilitating about 7 to 10 miles of state trail every year using Legacy funds as well. That second next biggest pillar is about 21.5% in the dark blue there, and that is connecting people to the outdoors. And we're proposing about 21% in the next biennium for that investment. Those funds go to our signature ICANN program, which has been enormously popular and successful in reaching target arguments, our underserved folks in our system. We provide new interpretive programs and upgrades and interpretive displays, improving wayfinding and orientation, and then also doing very targeted outreach to multicultural media using those connecting people funds. And then in the light green there, you'll see about 17.5-18% in acquisition and development. We typically invest about 2/3 in this pillar in creating new opportunities and about 1/3 in acquisition. And the priorities for 22-23 are very similar to previous biennia, where we work on high priority acquisitions and in holdings within state parks and rec areas, as well as those really critical trail connections between communities and state trails. Other significant investments this year will include investments in the Glendalough State Park Trail out in western Minnesota, upgrading a safety issue that we have at Itasca State Park. We have a bike rental that's right next to a public water access, and there's long been some safety concerns there, so make some investments there. And then also working to finalize the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area Morocco Unit, which is a series of mountain bike trails. They're called the Phase 2 Trails. Nice suite of projects will actually kind of put a bow on our development there at Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area. And then finally, I'll just mention quickly that 1% little sliver in there, that's an off-the-top appropriation. DNR acts as a fiscal agent for the three coordinating agencies. And we, as you can see from this presentation and others, we coordinate really well together. These dollars are used to support our Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, a Conservation Corps individual placement individual who helps support all of that work, as well as connecting new audiences to the outdoors. Working on joint research for system-wide projects will be another priority for the next year. And then again, required by statute to do restoration evaluations. So those all are funded through that little 1% sliver there. Next slide, please. We always appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with one voice to the legislative committees each biennium about the significant difference that Parks and Trails Legacy has made across the board for our outdoor recreation system. And Legacy really has been a uniting force for all of us as we share a commitment to at least three core values that I think you've heard articulated here today between myself, Lisa, and Renee. One is that we are committed to aligning our investments with the 25-year legacy plan, which included a robust public opinion or public engagement process at the very outset of legacy. And we track our progress on those really important goals from that legacy plan year over year. Second core value is that we are committed to results and accountability. We answer to the Legacy Advisory Committee and yourselves and routinely report to the Legislative Coordinating Commission or committee on the website there to make sure that we are being as transparent and as accountable to that legacy plan as possible. And finally, I would just want to emphasize that each of our systems is committed to continuous improvement for the public. We have ambitious plans that we want to achieve with Legacy. We're in lockstep together in achieving those goals, in particular in making Minnesotans feel welcome across all of our systems in the great outdoors and keeping them wanting to come back. And we believe these three packages that we have outlined for this next biennium honor those values for the next biennium. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all three of you. Fantastic. Any questions from members? I don't see any. I actually have one. So I really appreciate that you've kind of talked about getting folks out and getting new people out there on the trails. I had a great opportunity to read a book over the last intern. It's called The Adventure Gap. And I think some of what you spoke today is trying to get to, as a committee, we've talked a lot about equity, trying to get people that are maybe disadvantaged, but yes, it's a minority of folks that don't have opportunities, but it's also poorer families. And so that's why the ICANN program and all three of you mentioned. I just wonder if you could just quickly throw out there how you're doing a little bit more about the ICANN, the numbers, and then kind of in each system what you're doing to get people out like that. And then I do see Steve Green has a question, so I want to get to that. Thank you.
I'm happy to start, Representative.
You talked about jobs too.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
So the two things I would just highlight in our system, and there are actually many more that we discussed last time at the committee hearing, but the ICANN program does reach about 50% to 60% people of color when it is promoted and advertised in multicultural media, which is why those two investments are so critical to be made hand in hand. So we are seeing the intended results from that program, which is to bring underserved audiences into the outdoors and help in a very welcoming and collegial, collaborative way, folks that have not gained those outdoor skills and help them feel comfortable in the outdoors so that they can come and enjoy our great system. The other one we're really proud of and excited about is it's something that we invest in here with the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. We make a commitment every year to fund a lot of our natural resource work as well as individual placement positions within the Department of Natural Resources to bring those young people into the career and really foster that next generation of conservationists. We do that here with legacy funds as well as the Department of Natural Resource investing in the IDEC program, which brings people of color into outdoor recreation or outdoor natural resources careers as well.
Thank you. Any of the other, either of you two or?
Yep. Sure, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
If I may. Sure. And the In the metropolitan area, the council has invested in a Parks Ambassador program to help engage with underserved populations in the region and help bring those folks into the region. Our parks implementing agencies who actually own and operate each of the regional park system components also have, several of them also have ambassador programs of their own, which we coordinate across the region to help bring all of those elements together. In addition, the council has invested in an equity grant program to help spur innovation amongst the implementing agencies, new programs, new capital projects, to help kind of find new ways of doing things differently that help not only bring people to the system, but keep people in the system as well. And jointly, through partnerships with local community-based organizations and underrepresented groups, bring new ideas to how we bring people into the system and make those spaces welcoming.
Thank you.
Just some highlights.
No, that's good. Thank you, Ms. Barajas. Ms. Mattson?
Thank you. Just briefly, I'd like to mention our 64, and you've heard this before, but our 64 facilities that are designated in Greater Minnesota, we don't own or operate. But in an attempt to spur more thinking creatively about how to bring communities into our parks and trails, particularly those underserved that don't feel welcomed or don't feel that they have the access, last year we set aside $250,000 as a Connecting People to the Outdoors set aside grant. So that didn't make our partners think about, do we rehabilitate this facility? Do we ask for funds to do repairs to an aging facility or do a Connecting People to the Outdoors grant? This way it's not an either or, it's a both. If you wanna do both, we encourage you to do that. So last year's $250,000 set aside was an attempt. This year we've done much more outreach with our partners to talk about thinking creatively, how you can bring in people, how we can make this much more of a welcoming environment. And to that end, we've set aside $750,000 this year. So in talking with our partners over the past year, we know we're going to see some really exciting projects to bring to you next year to talk about. So we feel very positive about what we can do to spur those sorts of investments and creative thinking among our partners.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Green, I'm sorry, I saw your hand go up right when I was asking my question, so I would have got you.
That's fine. Actually, I was trying to get out of my full screen or get back into my full screen, so it was my fault that I was a little late. Question is probably for Ms. Rivers, if she can't, maybe some of the other testifiers. You know, I've seen over the years, and especially, well, I shouldn't say especially, but even in my own area, where a lot of the infrastructure that even when you've talked about here today is starting to deteriorate. And I know people who have even fallen or, you know, been in accidents on the bike trails, because especially those that are paved will break up in Minnesota, just like our roads. In fact, more severely. And so we continue to add to our system, add to our infrastructure when a lot of it's already failing. If you're looking into the future, you know, we've got 13 years of this down, we've got 12 years left, and you're still buying more and expanding. Is there any policies in place to maintain these infrastructure into the future so that there would be money set aside for it? Because if there's not, we better start looking at that. Because you're going to have a whole lot more to deal with in a few years if you continue to grow the way you are.
Ms. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, thank you for that question, actually. It's a really fair question and a good one, something I grapple with daily. You know, the primary sources of ongoing rehabilitation and funds for state parks and state trails are legacy, you know, this pot of investment opportunity and bonding. We also have a proposal in this year for additional funds from LCCMR. So as all of you are very well aware, there's always this tug and pull between finishing out the state authorized system, which is authorized by statute. You guys authorize the system in which we're building. So there's always that tension of the new bright and shiny and taking care of what we have, you know, reinvesting in maintaining the system that we have. And unfortunately, when it comes to those state trails, Representative Green, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect in really understanding that you don't just hawk a line of asphalt onto the ground and walk away from it and call it good. These things, just like state parks, require constant care and feeding. Culverts need to be cleaned out. Track sealing has to be done. Signage has to continue to be updated. So there's a whole suite of maintenance that has to happen that's operational, as well as those end of life, useful life investments that need to be made. So I would very much welcome. I know Commissioner Strowman would very much welcome further conversation about how we invest in the maintenance, the ongoing maintenance and care of this big, beautiful system that we have in Minnesota. That as we saw this year, as Lisa Barajas mentioned at the very beginning, people love our outdoor recreation spaces, whether they're metro, regional, greater Minnesota, or state, and they want us to invest in those. So how do we strategize a long-term plan to continue to make these necessary investments in the system that people love? And I welcome that conversation. I think we do need a more consistent year-over-year policy. I think Commissioner Strowman has articulated that as well. So thanks again for that question. It's critical.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you. Just a comment. If most of the people live in Minnesota, especially if you're a little older and you've been around the area at all or out in greater Minnesota, a lot of our landscape is wet. I mean, we have a lot of water out there. And in the spring of the year, a brand new trail, just like a brand new road, in some cases, can be destroyed just by the frost coming out of the ground and heaving the ground. So, you know, there's a lot of things I don't know if they were taken into consideration when they began paving some of these trails, but I see a lot of it going to be a severe problem into the future, because you can't go back and pave them every year. That's not feasible. So maybe to think about that when you're moving forward. It always seems so nice to say, hey, let's pave the trail. But as somebody who worked in the township for years and sees what this can do to our roads, I can imagine what's happening to these trails as well.
Thank you, Representative Green. It is a real problem. And I have self-promotion. I have a bill that's in capital investment to help DNR to improve, because over time we're definitely, I think you mentioned 10 to 12 miles of repair, and then we need to keep growing that to stay ahead of it. Otherwise, it will get worse. Representative Murphy, good morning. Go ahead when you're ready.
Good morning. I would like to ask Ms. Mattson to clarify more about what's happening between April and July, and requests for new funding trails.
Representative Murphy, thank you for that question.
Yep.
Right now it's our applications period is opening up for all 64 facilities. So not just trails, but our parks and special recreation feature parks as well. From April through the end of July, those entities have an opportunity to apply for FY23 funding projects. So we expect that this year we'll get more in the line of our 22 to 25 applications we typically receive. Last year was a little bit lower, obviously due to budget concerns that municipalities had. So that application cycle opens up now, and we look forward to receiving some really interesting and thoughtful applications for the next year.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. It's for fiscal year 23.
Correct. It is for fiscal year 23, yes.
And you're going to start making the picks for 22 now, in April 2 also?
Representative Murphy, thank you, Chair Lilly. The projects that I outlined today are our recommendations for FY22. So that would be the Commission's recommendations to all of you for the FY22 projects.
Okay, thank you very much for that clarification. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I believe, Ms. Mattson, we got to get a dot up there, I know, happen to know a representative right out of Duluth that doesn't have a trail in the district.
No trail.
They've kicked her out of the mall from walking too early in the mall, so she's a mall violator. But Well, that's another issue with law enforcement. We'll have to get her a trail.
And what Representative Green was just talking about, if you look out of my bedroom window, which I did this morning, and I just see puddles galore in the field. And so I understand why the parks and trails person for Duluth Parks was on TV earlier in the week saying, please do not go on the trails because they're too wet. We have to let them dry up. And I'm saying, Mary, you cannot walk down in the field because there are too many big fat puddles and I need new overshoes.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy, and thank you all presenters. It's always nice to have you. I love this. I know you've been back a couple times, but I just really believe that you're just really doing a great job with the legacy funds and really helping Minnesota. I mean, we're just so blessed with our parks and trails all over the states. Thank you all for your work, and I'm sure you'll do quite well in our budget. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Have a good day. Representative Christensen. So we have your bill. So Representative Christensen, we'd like to move that House File 1905 be laid over for possible inclusion. And would you like to make that motion, please?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So we have your bill, and we had to cut your folks short last week. But please, Representative Christensen, pick up where you left off and tell us some more. Thank you for what you're working on.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yeah, we will just pick up the presentation. This is House File 1905, where we have a request for funding for our fabulous public television network here in Minnesota. So I have with me today Les Heen and Bill Strasinski from public television, and we are actually going to pick up. We had started a video, and I believe we got a couple minutes into it, and we just have a couple minutes to go. So we're going to pick up where we left off, and then Les and Bill will carry on with their testimony. So thank you,
Representative Christensen.
Go ahead, Les. Roll the video.
Mr. Heen.
Okay, just a moment.
Welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. I want to get to the right spot. Okay.
5 million people in
we
our
see it?
Yes, sir. Maybe increase the volume or.
Strengthening community voices in our storytelling has sparked deep collaboration, engagement, learning, and action. Pioneer PBS in Granite Falls and Appleton has created a platform for little-known stories to be told in rural Minnesota, helping to bring important social issues to the forefront of community discussion, like the story about veteran Bob Warman that lifted a veil of secrecy about long-term effects of nuclear testing. More than 1,000 hours of legacy-funded programming is accessible to millions on air, online, in classrooms, and in our communities. The MPTA highlights the ongoing resonance and relevance of history. It's essential to understanding who and where we are today. Jim Crow of the North, a history documentary from Twin Cities PBS, delves into the complex history of racial covenants in Minneapolis, which has lasting repercussions on housing inequities today. Community members gather together to watch and to take action.
I think Prejudice Project is doing something unlike anything seen across the country, which I think is amazing. So they're mapping the history of housing discrimination.
Artists featured in MPTA content report they are selling more work. Viewers are attending more arts events and are contributing more to their local economies because of our programs. in Austin and Rochester, KSMQ programs like Off 90 and Our Town strive to reflect the community and the stories they tell, highlighting cultural traditions, natural resources, and what brings us together.
Happy New
Prairie Mosaic celebrates people who enhance the quality of life in Moorhead and Crookston.
That's my story, and it's the story of Indian Americans that have come to this country and called America their home.
Legacy funding also empowers Prairie Public to support teachers and students in culturally responsive learning, and MPTA stations offer more than 1,000 free online guides that empower educators to bring Minnesota stories into the classroom.
I've always hoped that the Secret War would be taught in more classrooms. This is a way for us to provide the resources in order to encourage teachers to be inclusive of this history in the curriculum.
The PBS Learning Media site expands this impact even further and is accessed by over 10,000 Minnesota educators each year. Over the past 2 years, Legacy Funding has supported over 40 full-time positions, essential to bringing a range of diverse stories into focus, like Sacred Breath. Over 6 years, Lakeland PBS followed First Lutheran Church of Bemidji as it built the new pipe organ, which replicates the sound of a native flute. WDSE WRPT is teaching viewers in Duluth and the Iron Range about local Native American history and culture through the Native Report. Community members see themselves and their interests reflected within The Slice. MPTA content like The Slice is widely accessible online and since 2009 has garnered over 35 million online views. Our communities tell us that our work helps them understand and appreciate Minnesota, connects communities, and is essential to their sense of belonging. Many stories, one state, our legacy.
Thank you. That's really great. It's really tells a lot of different stories and different layers of the legacy amendment as well. So thank you for that. Representative Christensen, who would you like to?
I think we'll thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we'll continue on possibly with Bill Straczynski. Are you ready to go?
Yes.
Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good morning. I also want you to know that you can watch that video and get some other information about public television and our legacy efforts by going to mptalegacymedia.org. That same website also has some background information about our project we did last year, or working on right now, I should say, called Moving Lives Forward. As I explained many times to this committee, and we appreciate your time, and we certainly appreciate your longstanding support, public television itself is not a museum, a symphony, orchestra, or a theater, but it chronicles each region's rich history and provides arts and culture to every home in the state of Minnesota. We've heard that our programs are even more important than ever because of people have been staying at home quite a bit the past year, and they've turned it more and more into our station and looking at our legacy information. In our past year, we broadcast over 14,000 hours of legacy content into each home. As I said earlier, last time we met, we had more than 10 million legacy views on our websites, their downloads and views, so it's a pretty important thing. Public television provides cradle-to-grave education services that involve and inspire. And on a typical day, about a third of our programming on public television is dedicated to children's education. So at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to briefly turn it over to Les Heen, who will talk about our plans for the coming biennium. We so appreciate it. Mr. Chairman, I have to tell you from a personal perspective, and members of the committee, I've been involved in the legacy amendment since several years before it passed the legislature. And I can't begin to tell you how thankful we are for what's happened. And I can't believe the impact we've had over all of these years. None of us thought about that impact when we were working this legislation through the legislature. And education alone is just phenomenal. So thank you for that past support. Mr. Heen.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Heen, go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. And again, for the record, my name is Les Heen, and I'm representing the Minnesota Public Television Association. So as we look forward for the coming biennium, our plans are picking up to some extent where you saw elements of the video, which was produced more than a year ago now, and that is about the education emphasis that we have. We know it was a difficult year for schools in the past year, but there's a lot of interest out there in what is available to help Minnesota students learn about our history, our cultural heritage, and the arts. Our funding request for the coming year is the same as it was in the past biennium. So in the past biennium, we received $8.92 million, and that is our request again going forward. With funding at this level, our plan is to expand on that work in education. Again, you heard about that briefly in the video. Some of the things that we plan to do is to work at developing some more engaging and really immersive educational tools and professional development workshops. You saw some of that in the video, and we plan to do to build on that to get more of the stories of arts and cultural heritage and history into classrooms and work with teachers. We would build a resource hub. As you saw there, PBS Learning Media was a resource hub. We would build on that. And there's been a lot of increased interest in that in the past year because, of course, so many people have worked to develop greater educational tools that young people can take advantage of. Our stations would do a number of efforts specifically at various stations. For example, some would hire staff to coordinate education efforts. And that could include creating resources and workshops and doing more of that. We also want to implement some marketing to make sure that people in Minnesota know that they can go to the stations as a go-to resource for stories about history, arts, and cultural heritage. We really look forward to doing a lot more to tell these stories, as Mr. Straczynski mentioned, and tell these stories to the communities and make them even a lot more valuable for education. That's really important. So I know that we were able to start this at the last meeting and continue on this one, so I don't want to belabor the points. So I want to just, in the interest of time, end it there and say that we really appreciate the opportunity to work with you today and the support of this committee, and we look forward to any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heen. Any member questions? I don't see any at this point. Thank you for coming back. My apologies for our last meeting, I'm great to hear continue to hear the story of what the public TV is able to do all over the state. I just want to, on a personal note, I want to mention I just finished, Mr. Straczynski, I just finished your book, and thank you for your service to our country. And he was a combat medic. And it's a great story that tells from his roots on the east side of St. Paul to fighting. And I was shocked to hear how little training you had. But anyways, I see Representative Green has a question. And Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I apologize. For some reason, my screen is slow trying to get the big screen back up today.
It's all good.
I had a question that I was asked, and I said, well, I'll try to find out.
Yep.
A lot of people are under the impression that public TV is owned by the state or that it's a public entity, but it's not. It's a private organization. It's a corporation. And so that being said, you know, their CEOs and their administration makes a lot of money, well into the six figures. Some their chief executive officer, for instance, makes like over $300,000 a year when you put in other compensation. So they're pretty highly paid folks there. And so the question is, who actually owns public television? Is it just a corporation, or is there, or is it owned by another conglomerate?
Thank you. I wasn't aware of that. So either one of you able to, sure. Mr. Straczynski?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Green, for the question. Public television in Minnesota is unlike public television in several states, including the states surrounding us. Those states do own public television stations. In Minnesota, when public television was launched back in the 60s, it was decided that it would be community-owned and operated. They're nonprofit entities, and they're owned by the communities in which they serve. But it was also decided, and it's been true over since the 60s, that the state of Minnesota has been a fiscal partner with us because it's a much better value for the taxpayers if we're nonprofits raising our capital and whatever, instead of relying on state taxpayers to fund all of our operations. That being said, we do pay competitive rates. Don't apologize for that with respect to public television station. It's not nearly the same fees, the same salaries that they could charge. They get paid in the commercial broadcast area, but our rates are competitive and because we do compete from that perspective for talent. Our information is all available. Salary information, we provide it every year to the Department of Administration in audited form. And so certainly it's there, and that's exactly who owns us, is our communities.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Straczynski, I don't expect you to apologize for paying out wages. I understand that there's big responsibilities when you're dealing with corporations, and these guys have a lot on their plate. But I do hear a lot of attacks on corporations from people in the legislature and complaining about wages. And I've never liked the term public television because it makes it seem like it's owned by the state. And I just want to make it clear to people, this is a private organization. It's a 501c3, but it is private. And it is hard to pin down who owns it. Now, I know you say that they're community owned, but if you break it up into different communities, there is a larger organization that's going on there, and someone has to be accountable. But I just wanted to know if there was a name to the corporation, but maybe there's not. Maybe it's a loose-knit corporation. So I thank you for answering the question.
Thank you. Any other member questions? I don't see any. Again, thank you, presenters. Thank you for coming. Any final comments, Representative Christensen? Thank you for coming back and doing
this
work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And thank you to my testifiers who have been fabulous to work with, and I'm proud to carry this bill, and I think we're all pretty proud of our public television in Minnesota, and so I sure hope you can support House File 1905. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Christensen, and Representative Christensen renews her motion that House File 1905 be laid over for inclusion and possible inclusion into the legacy finance bill. Thank you. Thank you, presenters, and
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of
the
committee.
Have a good day. Thank you for your work. And,
thank you.
Enjoyed your book. That was awesome.
Thank you for your words.
Representative Jordan, welcome back. I know you had to sneak away for a second to present a bill. It's an active time at the legislature, and I'm impressed. So welcome back, and maybe if you want to move your bill, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2350 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you. We have your bill before us, and go ahead and tell us what you're working on here today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 2350 is a request from the Department of Administration to use funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for the Minnesota Statewide History Inventory Project. The State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO, seeks to build a web app that would digitize and map Minnesota's historic resources for the public. This includes mapping historic properties, providing scanned documents, and supplying mechanisms for other historical artifacts to be digitized and accessed for future research and use. Information on this web app would include location, identification, and evaluation of the historical or archaeological resources. Might also have accompanying maps, photos, forms, and other facts to put these objects into context. Currently, if Minnesotans wish to access this information, they must go in person to SHPO's offices. By digitizing these archives, Minnesotans can access their state's history from their own home or library computer. Mr. Chair, I have Amy Spong with me from SHPO to discuss this project and the funding, and we'd be happy to answer member questions that anyone may have. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan. Welcome, Ms. Spong. Go ahead when you're ready, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Lilly and representatives. My name is Amy Spong. I'm the Deputy Historic Preservation Officer with the Department of Admin. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for authoring this bill and to the committee for allowing me to present the Minnesota Statewide Historic Inventory Project request. The SHPO office encourages best preservation practices so that all people can share in the environmental, social, and economic benefits of preserving Minnesota's cultural heritage. We draw on cooperative approaches and expertise to help individuals and communities at all levels of planning, development, and government to achieve their preservation goals and responsibilities under the law. One of the ways SHPO supports the statewide preservation program is by identifying places and properties that may be significant and worthy of recognition and preservation on a local, state, or national level. SHPO began systematically surveying and recording Minnesota's historic resources in 1977, and today the SHPO maintains the paper inventory records of over 100,000 historical and archaeological properties, which continues to grow with the assistance of many agencies, individuals, and organizations. The historic inventory is a first point of reference for state and federal agencies and project proposers to understand the effects that public projects like land transfers and transportation projects may have on historic and cultural resources. The inventory also serves as a repository for certain products that come from both the Arts and Cultural Heritage Grant Program and SHPO's federal pass-through grants to certified local governments, such as inventory forms, survey reports, and National Register nominations. Why fund this project now? Timing, momentum, and available federal funding. By June 30th, 85% of our paper historic inventory forms will be scanned, and most of the properties will be mapped. This work will continue through fiscal year 2022 in partnership with MnDOT. And MnGeo recently completed their analysis of SHPO's current system and has recommended an off-the-shelf solution with some customization. The requirements are being refined now, and the cost estimates to build the application are current. By allowing for digital access, the historic inventory will ultimately be more complete, save time and money for project proposers and researchers, allow for greater understanding of historic resources through improved data analysis, and may result in more informed decision-making, which aids in the protection of Minnesota's heritage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sprung. Representative Green, I see you have a, I got you this time.
Yeah, I was quicker this time too. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the testifier or the author of the bill. I mean, this stuff is, it looks like it's been going on since, she says, 1977. And I'm wondering if you can explain to me, not that I'm against this, I think we're heading in this direction, but if you can explain to me if this, if there's a problem with this, with legacy rules that talk about supplementing versus supplanting. If the work is already being done, is this... does this meet the qualifications for legacy funding?
Representative Jordan or Ms. Brong, you heard the question.
This would be a good question for Ms. Brong.
Chair Lilly and Representative, thank you. I'm not sure I can completely answer. Yes, we have been collecting this information since 1977. We have not been able to move it into a digital format. Of course, the technologies just weren't there in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And so this is something that most SHPO offices are moving to and having to do that outside of their general operating funds and to seek other funds outside of our general funds. I'm not sure if that answered your question, Representative.
Representative Green.
Thank you. And maybe it did. I will say that, we might want to be careful with some of this because the legacy funds are audited quite often. In fact, hopefully they'll be audited again here soon. And in the past, we've had to go back and find violations. It would be nice if we could do the research before so there would not be any violations during the audits.
Representative Green, I have a hand jumping up in the crowd here. So, Mr. Yoke?
Mr. Lilly, Chairman Lilly, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Yoakum. I'm also the Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer by the fact that I'm the Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Department of Administration. And specifically to Representative Green's question, that is a good, that is a very solid question that we had actually thought about at the department. And just so we differentiate, the work of the historic inventories, doing the inventories, collecting the inventories, all that analysis, that is not going to be done by legacy funds whatsoever. That is still going to be done, whether it's through the federal or state funds for the SHPO program. What the what we are seeking the funds for right now is just to make that information more readily accessible to the public by being able to digitize and put that out electronically through the portal. As of right now, the public only has access by coming to the Minnesota Department of Administration offices in St. Paul in order to go through those paper files. So what we're trying to do is create the accessibility a long term to the public and to the researchers, which hopefully should lead to more upfront solid research and preservation efforts so that folks don't have to don't end up running into problems on their projects after the fact. And so that's the part that the reason why we do not feel that this is supplanting at all, but it is supplementing the work, because the actual work that has been going on, as Representative Green referenced, since 1977, that is not going, that will still continue to be funded through operating funds and not through legacy funds. I hope that helps.
Thank you, sir, and nice to see you. Representative Green, any follow-up?
Just to say that, you know, you may want to be careful there. It sounded like the answer, I know it's a good attempt to answer the question, but the switching over into digital is being done pretty much on a regular basis now, and it's something that everybody's doing. And so I think, and I'm not trying to criticize, I'm just trying to say, to avoid any problems in the future, just be careful on how you how we disperse the funds and make sure they're correct. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, very good question. We I don't want to be in one of Noble's audit reports, so I've really encouraged all the funds areas to be great stewards, and I sure don't want to be in one of those again. It's been a long, long time. Anyways, Representative Jordan, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great project. I think we have a really rich history in Minnesota, but if our public can't access that history, it's meaningless. If a curious Minnesotan or a student or a researcher can't actually find these objects from their own home and think about them and wonder about earlier Minnesotans who came before, I think it's a shame that we have all this, and this is a way to really democratize our history and make it public for everyone. So I hope that we can get your support. I'm happy to answer any other questions offline, and I know the Department of Administration would as well.
Thank you. Would you like to renew your motion then?
Yes, I renew my motion that House File 2350 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. The bill is laid over. I know this isn't traditional, but I see Representative Acomb, did you have a question? Somebody, oh, okay. Okay, I just wanted to, I got a text from someone saying maybe you did, I'm sorry. Okay, Representative Anderson, you're on our committee. I saw your presenter. Representative Anderson is on the committee. Would you like to move that House File 1327 be laid over for possible inclusion?
That would be my wish, Mr. Chair, and thank you much for hearing the bill this morning.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. We have your bill before us, and good morning. Go ahead and tell us about what you're working on here, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, House File 1327, would provide some financial support for an organization that's really pretty well known in West Central Minnesota. It's the Central Square Cultural and Civic Center. Now, this group took over the old Glenwood High School building back in the 1990s now, quite a few years ago. And they literally saved it from demolition when they took this over back all those years ago. And in the following years, Central Square has developed a really robust program of cultural and heritage programs that have served the residents of our area very well. And we heard from Central Square earlier in the year, I think our first committee hearing, about the effects of COVID on some of the organizations such as this, and not being able to put on plays and productions and have concerts and things like that. So it's been effective, been in effect all across the state. Now at Central Square, the centerpiece really of the entire thing is the auditorium. It's just a wonderful building. When groups perform there, they say the acoustics are outstanding. It's fairly large and seats a number of people. And, you know, the auditorium dates back to the 1930s, so it's old, and it was constructed back in those days. And one thing a lot of folks mention when they leave a performance at Central Square is that the seats are really pretty uncomfortable. You know, they're the old wooden seats with the rigid wooden armrests on each side. And I also suspect that back in the day, folks might have been a little bit slimmer because they're a little bit difficult to fit into sometimes. Not a lot of room or space there. So this would be an outstanding project at Central Square to do that and upgrade those old uncomfortable seats in the auditorium. And with us this morning is the director at Central Square, Cheryl Larson, to tell us more about the proposal. We had her before the committee this morning, Mr. Chair. So we'd like to hear from Ms. Larson this morning, if possible.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Welcome, Ms. Larson, and please go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Chairman Lilly, and thank you, Representative Anderson. My name is Cheryl Larson. I'm the executive director for Central Square in Glenwood, Minnesota, Pope County, in the central heart of Minnesota. It's my honor to be here with you today. And it's apparent you saved the best application for last, I think. Is that right? So I also want to thank Anderson staff for distributing some information to you. I believe you have some About Us pages and some pictures of our beautiful theater that I would like to take just a couple minutes to talk to you about today. Representative Anderson said, originally built in 1936 as a high school auditorium, and yes, you're absolutely correct, codes were different at that time, and I think people were different at that time. We're still sitting in the original seats built in 1936, and were used for over 55 years by high school students, so you can imagine the wear and tear there. In 1995, we were incorporated as a nonprofit arts organization, and cushions were added to those seats. Now, 25 years later, 18 concert series later, they are pretty threadbare, worn, but our theater is still beautiful. It's the largest of its kind between Minneapolis and Fargo, North Dakota. Like we said, it has beautiful, pristine acoustics. You can literally stand on the edge of the stage and speak and whisper and be heard at the back of the room. We work really hard to bring quality entertainment to our residents of our region. We are the only multidisciplinary arts organization in the entire Pope County, and I would even extended beyond to our region, maybe over into Sturgeon and Douglas counties on some areas. So we provide opportunities that people in rural Minnesota would not otherwise have. And when we work hard to get them there, we've also upgraded our sound systems, our light systems, performance staging, that type of thing. And we've had some really great talent grace our stage over the years, including Bobby McFerrin, the Rochester Symphony, the Pam Tillis. We could go on. I could provide you a list of 18 years of concert and theatrical performing. And still to this day, when we do all that work to get them into the theater, when they get there and they sit down, they're uncomfortable. The arts experience is greatly diminished. No matter how hard we try to provide that, many people are extremely uncomfortable, squished into seats, knees pressing against the chair in front of them. And it's not safe, it's not up to code, and the whole experience they come away with is not being enhanced by the seating. Like I said, it's being diminished. And in the last year, we've had to put in a new roof over our facility and new heating and air conditioning. And this expense is just not within our reach. But I want you to know our community is extremely excited about this. And we've offered $82,000 in matching funds. And I can assure you that I have already received that in grant pledges from the community to meet that financial commitment. And we ask for your help to help us upgrade our theater and enhance the performance and entertainment to our community. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. You have me excited to get out to see a play or a show in person. It's just this COVID has just been so horrible. So it'll be great to get together again, all of us people. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say that in my younger years, I visited that facility quite a few times and watched basketball games there. I think I even coached some games in there.
Wow.
And I think it's a really nice building, fine facility. But I have a question. There was an important event that happened right behind the school on the field out there. And Representative Anderson, are there any plans maybe to put a marker out there commemorating that event?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And luckily, I'm aware of what Representative Erdahl is talking about. He intercepted a pass, I think saved the game, won a game for the Litchfield Dragons, knocking off the Glenwood Lakers on the old football field down there.
Oh, my gosh.
And now that field is no longer there. It's been there's a senior assistant facility down there and some apartments. But it's still a hallowed spot in Glenwood.
Yeah.
Treasure that spot and think you stole a game from us anyway.
So probably an annual pilgrimage there or something. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. Perhaps you could just, you know, put the marker more near the building, just say in the field that used to be beyond. But, you know, yeah. I won't press that. Thank
well,
you.
We can look at it, yes.
Thank you. That's fun. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I've been looking through some of the information provided to us, but I don't know what the total ask is.
The total cost, Representative?
Yep, go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Murphy, the total cost is about $282,000, and we're asking for a grant of $200,000 with a local match, then of the rest of the balance of $82,000. In that local match.
And that's primarily for the chairs?
Yes, to replace the chairs.
Yep.
Yeah, to replace the chairs, I think put in a few, I think there's over 1,000 seats in there now. They want to reduce the number of chairs, make them, of course, larger and a little more comfortable. So that's what the plan is, to put in new seating, new chairs, and that's what this grant is for, yes.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Yeah, these facilities are fascinating. We've had the opportunity to tour the Chatfield facility through the years on capital investment, and it's interesting. The bathroom facilities are also often a challenge. I think our bathroom expectations are far different. They had a similar size auditorium that you have, and they had two little teeny bathrooms, and that was back in the day. So I think some of the bathroom expectations, as well as of us maybe getting a little wider, has also changed.
Yeah.
So
very true, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, any final comments?
No, Central Square is looked at very well out in our part of the state. They do a great job. I even saw the Russian ballet there, or the some Nutcracker, I think what it was called. So even I got some culture out there. So great organization. And again, renewing my motion that House File 1327 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Your bill has been moved and for possible inclusion. Thank you. And Ms. Larson, thank you. Nice to see you again, and nice presentation. Thank you. So we're basically there. We have a few seconds on our agenda, and not Representative Murphy has not really had a full, apparently one, two, she was shortchanged a little bit on library time. And so I'm wondering if we could have an opportunity to, if I can have the indulgence of the committee to hear a little bit more of what's going on in libraries. And I think it's important for Minnesota and certainly important to me because maybe I won't hear it on every phone call. So Representative Murphy, you have the floor.
Oh my gosh. I didn't really think, Mr. Chair.
Time is wasting.
I wanted to share some experiences that I've had going to libraries and the programming that the libraries provide for people of all ages in all regions of the state. And I wanted to tell you about some examples that I participated in and have left serious memories with me that I think about often and has brought me great joy. And one is that's been very, very puzzling. I go to these to see how many people are going to be there. I have, maybe five really accessible libraries to go to with their and to monitor their programming in my region and my area, and that I can get to and back home in any evening's time or a day's time. There's a lot more I could get to if I would spend more time on the road, but the one experience that was such a disappointment was when Alisa Magolian from the Minnesota Opera was at the Two Harbors Library. And this family came in and a couple of the older kids went to the books and the play area in the library. And then the littlest girl came into the area where the program was going to be with the Minnesota Opera teacher. And there were only six kids at that program, but every one of them was on the edge of their seats for the whole time that she read and she sang. And the kids joined in. And there was this little girl that joined in, and she must have been 4 or 5 years old. Did not say her name, did not talk, but just was enthralled. And the teacher said, Miss Alicia said, just follow along with me. And the little girl did. And whenever that she sang, every note was exactly like the teacher presented. The program ended and the little girl vanished. She looked at, and the teacher looked at me and she said, find that little girl. And so I ran throughout the library. The family had left. I asked one of the patrons out on the sidewalk where I was looking to see if I could catch them before they got in the car. It was the mom and her kids. And she said, no, but I know they live north of me. And she said, we live in Grand Marais. So they had come all the way down for some reason to Two Harbors. And the little girl was there. And so I went back to the teacher, said, I have no luck. I know she lives, from what these people told me, they were vacationing in Two Harbors from Grand Marais for whatever reason. I have no idea. But Miss Alicia said, I'm just so brokenhearted because that little girl has perfect pitch and she has great talent. and she's got to get into some kind of program with for her music. We've got to find her. So I talked to the librarian and I talked to the various people there and asked them to please notify me if those people ever came in again. But they never, to my knowledge, they never came in. And that little girl is still singing with Miss Alicia's songs. But what an opportunity we missed because we weren't able to catch her. And I just think that there's so much promise for families and kids and people of all ages to participate in opportunities that they never dreamed about through the programming. The other example I want to tell you is about this giant of a man, the great Rodini, who comes to libraries all across the state, but he must have appeared at 20 different libraries in northeastern Minnesota that summer. I saw him at the Duluth Library. And he came about 10 o'clock, made his presentation from 11 to 12, and then again back at 1 to 2. And he spent time with those kids as an individual. He must have been 6'6", maybe, and all dressed in sparkly, magical clothing. Just a tall, slender man, man of color with fancy red and white clothing and just glamorous. And these kids just looked up at him with just so enthralled. And he stayed from the time he arrived to the time he left working with those kids. I don't know when he went to the bathroom. I don't know when he ate lunch. I don't know anything, but he spent time with the kids that were coming to see him first and then had left. And the new kids that came in, he welcomed them and talked individually to every kid. And there must have been, between the two presentations, at least 300 kids there that day. And when I finally went into the library to get my books, and when I had already gotten the books, the kids had dispersed, and I was driving up Mesaba Avenue, and there was the great Rodini, still in full costume, walking up the hill, and there were about 7 kids following him or ahead of him along the way. And what an impact that he made with his magic and his thrills, but more than anything, with his personal attention that he gave every single child. And so these aren't just things that bop in, bop out, and are never talked about again. But when I was talking to the regional librarian about this, Jim, I asked him about it, and within a second, he got me the great Rodini's name, and he had the information of how to get that man back into the series when they make their contracts with the programs. But the impact that the programming has, whether it's on the ladies learning crocheting in the library quiet hours, or whether it's the lifelong learning experiences, whatever, somebody is making a connection. And that's what's so important all the way across our state and in every region, of some constant money that's coming in to bring unusual experiences to our people. And I just wanted to share. And one other experience I had was the people from Mankato came up. I can't remember the name, but it was an afternoon tea with the Betsy Tasty people, the people that had written or that were remembering the Betsy Tasty books and the little girls that were at the at a afternoon tea, and we all had sorbet together with our tea at the in the basement of the Two Harbors Library. 10 people there in their finest little clothing with their little hats on, just like the olden days. And one little girl even had gloves. It was so great to be eating our sorbet with our fingers up in the air, just enjoying the conversation. And everybody goes out of their way for these opportunities to be shown to someone that's never had them before and will remember them forever. Thank you for listening. Thank you for letting me tell you. And get a chance to go see the authors when they come, and get a chance to go see the kids' programs when they come, because that lightens your heart, and you would never think COVID would have made such a difference to stopping these experiences in our regional libraries. But they're ready to start in again now with the new summer season. And part of the summer learning bill that passed yesterday will be reaching out to some of those programs too.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I kid you, but the work that is being done by our libraries is so vital, and I'm glad that we have had an opportunity to hear some more. The legacy funds, and they've been really good stewards, and library, they have art in the libraries and programming that you've spoken of this morning. I've been blessed. I've even been able to attend, it wasn't legacy funded, but Representative Erdahl had a book event kind of near to my home, and I went to it, and it was really neat. One of the characters in Miss Wakefield is kind of ended up moving kind of to my part of the town, and he spoke to the local historical society, and that was really great. But we've been really blessed by the work of the libraries, and it's a great example of all the work that we're seeing in all the funds. So with that, I don't see any other member questions. We have a big day on Friday. We're going to roll out the big, our big effort, our big bill. And so hopefully we can see you again on Friday, and then we'll be all set up for our big, we have a bit of a break, and then we can come back and hopefully push this great bill over the great effort over the finish line. Again, thank you everyone for your participation. Great presentations this morning, and I'm really grateful for all of your work. Thank you. Have a good day. We're adjourned.